up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour number two. Thanks for joining us as we continue our NFC West preview. We'll talk more about the Rams coming up this hour. We do have the good, the bad, and the dumb. And don't look now, but week zero is coming up. It is right here on Saturday. A number of college football games, including Nebraska and Northwestern, which will be played in Dublin, Ireland. I don't know. I've thought about this. How much of our of American football successfully can be exported? In Dublin, Ireland, I am sure that it's like, hey, this is pretty cool. Like Nebraska and Northwestern are coming. But in the localization of college football, which is where it really, really is popular, is that product something that can be sent abroad? Like, it's not an NFL game, but it could it be sent abroad? I don't know. It's still a major, you know, college football program, even though Nebraska has fallen on hard times. Nebraska still has a brand. It may not be the brand it used to be, but it's still a brand. But anyway, week zero is upon us. Now, I saw an argument yesterday that made me think that, you know, somebody was pointing, I think it was Nicole Arbuck, who said that week zero needs to have a few more, you know, sexier games, if you will, than what it has. It's got like Duquesne playing Florida State and whatnot. But I don't know if we would enjoy that. I think if you're going to have a week zero, Vanderbilt at Hawaii is probably, you know, the SEC game you would have in week zero. The celebration of college football is next week. That is the start of everything. These games that are on the schedule this Saturday are important. They count as wins and losses. Northwestern against Nebraska is actually a Big Ten game. But it's not until next week that we really feel the impact of game week. We'll have a full slate on Thursday night. There'll be games Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all through that weekend. Do we want week zero to have a matchup like the Backyard Brawl, for example, you know, West Virginia versus 17th ranked Pitt? Do we want a game between two top teams in the country, an Alabama against, you know, a USC or something like that? Do we want that in a time slot or a part of the schedule? It's not traditionally the feeling of a full college football weekend. I'm going to tell you the answer for me is no. It doesn't mean you can't sprinkle in one very good matchup in this thing. But week zero is week zero for a wee reason, and it's because it's not week one.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser!
All right, Throwback Thursday. We are going to the 80s for Dwight Gooden and 1985. But we also have Throwback Thursday. And Throwback Thursday, really, you really can't put it in any sort of time capsule. It is what it is. It's Throwback Thursday. By the way, it's brought to you by Verizon. With their newest unlimited plan, everyone's welcome. Introducing Welcome Unlimited from Verizon for just $30 a line per month for four lines with auto pay plus taxes and fees. Their best priced unlimited plan ever. For real, $30 a line for the whole family. The network you want, the price you love. Switch to Verizon today. Paper-free billing required. Unlimited 5G nationwide 4G LTE. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. All smartphone lines on the account must be on Welcome Unlimited and are eligible only for select promotions. Includes domestic talk, text, and data usage only. Data roaming at 2G speeds. All right, what's the good of the day, Ron Culver?
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
The good of the day is the University of South Carolina.
What has South Carolina done?
Well, they posted a video that has gone viral displaying, or so the people viewing it can preview, their new LED lights at Williams-Brice Stadium.
Williams-Brice Stadium getting LED lights.
Yes, and these lights, they're not your traditional stadium lights. Remember how, you know, back in the day, like our day, when you turned on those lights, you had to wait 7 days for the lights to actually turn on?
Right, yeah.
These pop on immediately, but not only can do that, but the way they have it configured, it'll make you feel like you're at a rave.
Really?
Yes.
Oh! They're going to use it during Sandstorm?
Yes, they will.
Yeah.
That's how they previewed it. They previewed it with I can't remember the other song they were using.
2001, A Space Odyssey. That's how they
entered. It was,
no, that's their entrance song.
I think it might have been Foreigner.
Oh, okay.
They were just kind of messing around playing with different songs, but yeah.
All right.
A night game there certainly will look.
Well, if Spencer Rattler doesn't fire you up, this certainly will, Gamecock Nation. I'm so excited for this season. It's unbelievable.
I know. And
I'm
mean,
so excited.
You got to check out this video. You're going to be like, I need to go to a game.
I might have to venture down there.
And you might have to, if you do go, make it a night game. Because I know they play a lot of day games.
Night games are great.
But, you know, got to get to a night game there.
I will say this about the University of South Carolina, and no joke. This team and that school, outside of a couple of years with Steve Spurrier where they won 11 games, and Joe Morrison back in the 80s had them, you know, nationally ranked and a contender back in the day when you were just a contender without a playoff. But I have yet to see a school be where fans support a relatively mediocre team and football school like the people who support South Carolina. They have never given their fan base anything of anything close to a national championship. And that stadium rocks like any other place in the SEC. It's really, really impressive. So that I will tell you, that is, I'm happy. That's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool environment. It was a great environment when I went in the, when I was a student there. I'm sure it's fantastic. Now, I haven't been to a game since 2009. That was my last South Carolina.
Oh, well, you're due then.
So I'm due then. I am absolutely due.
Especially with these new lights. I'm telling you, I mean, you know, with these LED lights, I mean, when they just pop right on, it's amazing to me, first of all. But what they're able to do, like, you know, programming them, it's fantastic.
Fantastic. That's awesome. All right, what's the bad of the day then?
The bad of the day, all right, this is bad for me. And it's not bad for anybody else who is a fan of Major League Baseball. Okay?
Okay.
So this isn't really a bad for you. It's just a bad for me. It was announced yesterday that during next week's Mets-Dodgers series at Citi Field, Timmy Trumpets will play Narco live.
Wow!
When Edwin Diaz enters the building.
Yeah. Well, if you're the Dodgers,
this is
what
bad.
Is your goal? Well, your goal is to make it so that
make
Edwin
it so
Diaz
it doesn't happen. But at the same time, if you're a fan of baseball, you can't wait to see this happen.
Yeah.
That's why I say, I mean, it's not just a bad for me. It's a bad for all Dodger fans.
Yes,
because
exactly.
Because if this happens, forget it. I wouldn't even bother going up to the plate.
This is so great. I know one day it'll get old, but right now it's not old.
Why are the Mets doing good things?
I know. This is amazing.
This is not our Mets that we know and love.
And this is the sad thing, is that we had the Mets guest on that says, oh, no, they've been doing this for a couple years. I'm like, well, I haven't heard it.
No, when?
I'm not going to Citi Field on a nightly basis. So I mean, where I live, I'm not getting Mets baseball on my TV on a nightly basis.
I will be tuned into this series because I know they're going to be ESPN or whoever is going to be carrying it. It's going to be showing
great
it a lot.
Series.
I do secretly hope that this happens because it'll be fascinating to see.
Will they have them for all the three games?
No, just on Tuesday.
Okay, so if
just
you're the Mets,
the
you're under a lot of pressure.
He's
man.
Coming out there to throw the first pitch. You bring him out no matter what.
I think so.
At some point, right? I mean, I guess
I can see stodgy old Buck Showalter though going, I don't care if Timmy Trumpets is here. We're not using him in this 7-0 blowout.
No, we don't need to bring Tom Trombone out. What's his name
What's
again?
What's his name? What? Tommy Trombone. I don't know. Did he play shortstop for the Lynchburg Mets back in the day? I don't care. Like, you can see stodgy old Buck Showalter blowing it for people by not allowing Edwin Diaz to come in so Timmy Trumpets can play.
And I guess, and you know, if you were to bring him in and it's, you know, say they're down 8-0, don't have a chance, it probably wouldn't have that same feeling as if, hey, you're bringing in Edwin Diaz. It's 2-1, top of the ninth.
I don't know if there's such a thing as baseball gods, but the baseball gods, please make it a 3-2 game.
Yeah.
Where the Mets are clinging on to this lead.
And you bring them in.
You just bring them in, and everyone's just on the edge of their seat.
and they just can't help themselves. They explode in joy.
And I wonder how they'll do it, because I mean, you know, Timmy Trump is, I'm imagining, won't be in the dugout during the game, or would he be up in a press box and then all of a sudden they just open the window and he just starts blaring his horn there?
Right, exactly.
Or will he be out, like, you know, by the Big Apple, and as that apple rises, he rises above the apple?
Yeah, right. That would be great.
I'm trying to create, you know,
Ron Culver,
a better scenery, a better feeling in that stadium as they're beating my Dodgers.
Your new director of special events and stadium operations, Mr. Ron Culver.
Yeah,
coming
I hate
the
fact that I secretly want this.
I know. I can only imagine. But one night, let's see.
One night,
goes.
You know what? They have, like, they're like, you know, 18 games up on the Padres. I think.
Yeah,
we're fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
They're gonna
sacrifice one game.
Yeah, one game.
All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is the Saints, because they are putting in a new express escalator at Caesars Superdome. First of all, I'm not used to saying that. I had to look it up.
No, me either. Wasn't it Mercedes-Benz Superdome
forever?
Forever, right?
Forever, but I had to look it up. I was like, is it Caesars? I got to make sure.
That is the one thing I have a hard time with sometimes is memorizing these. I mean,
these
stadiums pay hundreds of millions of dollars for this, and guys like me are like, oh, no, Candlestick Park?
Ugh.
Stop it.
Anyway, the Saints are putting in express escalators and are advertising it as claiming that these new escalators will get you there 28.3 times faster than before.
Does anybody want to ride a high-speed escalator? Is that a thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, but you get what I said, right?
28. Oh.
Are they the last team that's still clinging to this?
Why is it that you do this? And then I don't get the this is the second day in a row where I blew over the reference.
Yeah, well, I don't know about second day in a row.
Well, didn't yesterday I missed on something you said. Oh yeah, it was the contract of Nick Saban.
Oh yeah.
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 28.3
times faster than before.
They can't help themselves.
I feel like they're the last team, and they had nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
Clinging to this. The Patriots don't even cling to this anymore.
They just hate the Falcons so much.
That they included on everything.
Absolutely. Everything. They did the season. One year they did a season schedule release. They trolled the Falcons.
Yes.
On that loss.
And the Falcons trolled them.
Right.
At the same time. So, I don't know. I think, you know, 28-3, yes, it lives in infamy, but I think we can move past it.
See, my point was, I thought you were making a point about how
high-speed escalators.
High-speed escalators and being that exact.
Well, I mean, you need to get up. Well, yeah.
But now I know why they're that exact.
They don't know if it's actually 28.3 times faster. They just really like the number.
Yeah, right? Oh, it's like, out of nowhere, 28.3. You couldn't ask for a better. Sorry about that. We didn't even know. Yeah, whatever. You think they had the engineers design it that way, or do you think they're just making that up?
They're probably just making it up. But
I
wouldn't put it past them saying, guys, we need these to be 28.3 times faster.
High-speed
escalators.
I'm
not sure how fast that is, but
I don't know if I'd want to be on a high-speed escalator, but at the same time,
I mean, because we've seen when escalators fell, like there's that one at the stadium or a subway or something like that where people are just getting launched.
You know what? I'm going to tell you this. I got to tell you this story. So, for years, when I first married my wife has a little fear of escalators because of that reason, right? So we go up escalators. She's like, one of these days I'm going to be on this thing and it's going to collapse and slide, you know? And I always thought that was silly. And I was like, oh, come on. They're not going to. So we were in Las Vegas, and we were living in Las Vegas at the time. And we were going on one of those moving walkways. You know,
what
I mean? Like, it's not an escalator, but it's like a moving walkway.
Yeah.
And we were on a moving walkway. And I made the joke, and I'm like, you know why? I have a fear of moving walkways because I'm afraid they're going to turn into stairs. So one day, we're watching the news, and the news shows at an airport, one of those escalators turned into a slide, and there were bodies everywhere. Everywhere. Right? Like, injuries, people on top of each other.
Yeah.
Like some were – nobody died, but some people suffered real serious injuries. Every single time we go on an escalator, my wife goes, yeah, I was right about that. And I go, I know, stop. It's been years. I was young and stupid. I didn't think they were built like that. Because I always thought an escalator was, there was like things that prevent, like it would just stop. You know what I mean? Like the escalator would just stop and would just turn into stairs, right? You just go, oh, well, I just got to walk up now. I didn't know it could turn into a large slip and slide. And they do. And they do a lot, actually. They did at Coors Field. That happened at Coors Field one time. And again, bodies everywhere. Just, they turns into people collapsing, falling off the thing, sliding down, landing. Can you imagine being at the bottom and having like seven or eight people landing on top of you?
I know.
From a slide. So she was right. I was wrong. And I teased her forever on those, on her little fear of escalators. And so I've paid the price. I've done my penance, if you will. It's time for me to be released of that. So I'm at using this as therapy, if you know what I'm saying. As a married man, I'm sure you know it. They never let
it go. Well, what you're hoping for, secretly hoping for now, is just, you know, for a moving sidewalk to turn into stairs and go,
please,
see?
Please,
told
exactly.
You my fear wasn't
so
irrational.
If you can show me video of one of those moving platforms at an airport just randomly just jumping straight up and turning into stairs, I
or
would really
down.
Appreciate it. Or down, into whatever. Into what, it doesn't matter to me. If you could show me that, I would actually have some weaponization. Exactly. So 28.3 times faster, the moving escalator. Well
yeah,
done.
You got to get
Caesar
to those nosebleeds.
Superdome. You think the old days of the Superdome had escalators, or do you think people were forced to walk?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I've been to those stadiums where I've had seats on the upper, and when you just go walk.
Well, especially you know, like when they had like the I used to go to when I would go to Qualcomm. I can't remember.
Oh,
that.
Those round things.
The round things.
Yeah, well, you just it
walked
never
around
ends.
In a circle, and you're just like, is this enough? Just keep walking. Nope.
Keep walking. Excuse me, does my ticket get me here? No, it does not.
Nope.
They just keep pointing up.
Keep
going.
Moving.
Okay, I'll go. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's Tony D, Ron Culver's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we'll get to the Rams a little bit in our thought and preview of the finishing out the NFC West. We have been trying to get somebody from Los Angeles to help us out this morning. Maybe we'll try tomorrow. They're in Cincinnati for a joint practice with the Bengals. How fun must that be, huh? Ha ha. Didn't we just see you guys? Ha ha ha. I told you that I watched the last two installments of Hard Knocks. Has anybody ever done a which player or coach has been on Hard Knocks the most?
No.
You know, just weird circumstances like this player has been traded so many times and landed and just happens to land on teams that are on Hard Knocks. I tried to Google it, but I ended up with the only thing I could find was like a Reddit thread where people were speculating, but nobody had any real, like it wasn't like an official HBO, like, hey, so-and-so, a offensive guard has been in camp for Hard Knocks five times since the start of this program. By the way, what is it? 20 years that Hard Knocks has been around, like early 2000s, right? Where they've done it. So, remember when Real World came out? You're old enough to remember the first one, right? The Seven Strangers in a Loft in New York City.
How many times we've talked about this?
We've talked about this a million times.
Come on now.
I know. I should remember. So, when Real World came around, so they put Seven Strangers in a Loft in New York. And, of course, we got some really good television. But at the time, we didn't know what it was, right? We didn't know. It was attractive, not
no
because, yeah, it wasn't attractive because it was the best reality show. It was attractive because it was the only reality show, really. Like it was
the first.
Unique.
I mean,
it was the first. So, but what inevitably happens with every single reality show, which is once people know what it is, they use it in a way that benefits them, right? So it didn't take long before Real World, for example, when they got to season three, that you had two characters on that show that knew exactly what they were doing and what that medium would do for them. And that was Puck and Pedro, right? So Puck, he was this outlandish character, over the top character, eating peanut butter with his fingers, saying rude things, but he knew what he was trying to do. He knew he was on a television show. Pedro was a character that was HIV positive, and he also knew what he was doing. He also knew that those cameras were rolling and what it could do for the cause of AIDS awareness. But that inevitably happens. And before you know it, everybody's in on the game, right? And everyday life in on those shows, they couldn't help themselves. They always knew the cameras were rolling, so they always they acted in a way that the cameras were rolling. I hate to be cynical on this, but I have a feeling that now Hard Knocks has done that in the past and is now just that right now. I think Dan Campbell is the real deal. That's not what I'm saying. But I watch this thing and I go, I'm sorry. I feel like everybody knows the cameras are rolling here. I feel like there's something about this that's not it's not scripted. I'm not saying it's like the people are acting out in a way. But I think because they know the cameras are rolling, there is a sense of exaggerating things to a level that appeases their image on television. And I can't help but notice that at various parts of this series. And it doesn't diminish the value of the series, but it does make me wonder if there's a Hard Knocks effect that occurs when you're in training camp. Now, again, don't get me wrong. The cameras weren't rolling last year, and Dan Campbell acted kind of the way he's acting on this show. But I think some players see that they know the cameras are rolling, and they know that they can get some level of attention by being a little bit more outlandish, a little bit more vocal, a little bit more speechy, if you will, to sort of make up a term. And that's the kind of takeaway that I get. It's happened on Survivor. It's happened on all these things. Once you realize what the venue is, what the avenue is that you're on, I think you take it in a different approach. And I think that Hard Knocks is doing that right now, but it still is a fascinating show in a way. I've sort of criticized it in the past by saying it's exactly the same every year. Right. In the end, outside of a player or two and different stories but the formula doesn't really change. The formula is the same. You find this team that's struggling because they don't put playoff teams on there. So you're not getting teams that are trying to repeat as champions or repeat as division winners or whatever. You get struggling teams that didn't make the playoffs. There's a new hope. There's a new light. Everyone's excited. Everybody wants to change the culture. Everybody wants to do things a different way. Everyone's enthusiastic. You find four or five players early that have a story that they're sort of unique. Maybe it's the number one overall pick. Maybe it's the number five pick in the draft. Maybe it's the number six pick in the draft. Maybe it's a sixth round pick in the draft. But there's somebody that has a cool story. There's an angle. There's a rootability. Maybe you find a villain, some guy that's causing a problem. But the story is the same. You film these meetings, you film workouts, you talk to the players, they tell you the story, they film the family, and then cut day happens, everybody gets cut, and the team moves on and the series is over. Why am I attracted to this particular season of Hard Knocks? I think it really does stem from the head coach. I really have to say that the more inside that I've gotten to see of Dan Campbell, the more I really like it. Like him. I think you can fake some things on TV. There's no question about it. And I don't know if he's exaggerating his speeches for the effects of television. But I do know that there is a feeling when I watch this that he really, really cares about his players. He really cares about the team. And he really cares about his coaches. I think he loves the guys he's assembled. Right? Aaron Glenn, Deuce Staley, a number of other guys that have come on board to be coaches on this team. They are rootable. This is the one thing that comes away. And a lot of Hard Knocks doesn't lend itself to this. A lot of times these series, I've watched them where I couldn't care less about the Falcons after camp, or I couldn't care less about the Dolphins or whoever they were featuring. But there's something likable about this group. There's something likable about this team. And it has carried over. I don't normally watch this show. I'm not a huge fan of it. I was in the beginning, but 20 years with the same kind of storylines, it's hit or miss for me. But I like this season. I really do like this season of Hard Knocks. All right, coming up next, we'll talk more about the Rams and what their expectations are to try to repeat as champions as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, 1985 on a throwback Thursday. On this date, Dwight Gooden won his 20th game. He would complete the pitching triple crown. He would also win the Cy Young a year after he won Rookie of the Year. This video wasn't this the black and white video? Or
and color.
And color, but the woman got pulled in the supermarket. So,
into the cartoon.
Yeah, it was like a cartoon. Remember when videos told stories?
Yes.
Remember how fun times those days were? They don't anymore. They don't even do them anymore. Do they do videos?
The only place you can find videos is on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. They don't. There's no hot hit videos at 4 o'clock.
There's no channel. I mean, maybe there's a streaming service.
Yeah.
Yeah, like videos.
Used to be a channel that just played these all the time.
You remember it? I think we were talking about that channel just a segment ago.
Oh, God. It's great.
You made a reference to that channel.
I saw something real quick before we get to the Rams. I saw something that sort of talked about MTV's demise. And I don't know if this is true, but somebody wrote this column that said one of the reasons is that MTV didn't. While they didn't have to pay to air the videos, like, you know, how radio stations have to buy like a licensing thing. They didn't have to pay to play the videos. They didn't get paid by the record company to play the videos. And back then, the videos was a marketing tool. It's a major marketing tool for albums. So you would think you would think MTV would have created a business model where a record company would say, hey, we got Great White's new album coming out, and they've just made a video for this song. Can we get this in your on television? And MTV would say, yes, if you want us to play it this many times. They didn't do that. And so what they found was when they would have a television show, like a reality show, that they could really, you know, saw they could maximize the ratings. That's where they made the money. So that's why they sort of leaned in that direction. It makes sense, but I don't know if that's entirely true or not. But I did know this, there was a massive change in MTV from playing videos to not doing videos anymore.
It's like, you know, the real world was a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, right.
The blessing was that it gave us reality TV, and it was like, this is fantastic, this is fascinating, which spurned a whole new genre of television. But it's a curse because, yeah, it brought on the death of MTV, and it brought up the death of our civilization.
Yeah, it's really reality television is such an incredible phenomenon that I wonder where it's going to be. Is it something that's here to stay? Will it have a 30-40 year run, and then people, the new generation will not find it interesting? See, because everything is sort of reality now. If everything's on video, why watch something on video? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like if people are just putting so much TikTok out there, so many YouTube videos, like Seven Strangers in a Loft, does that appeal to like my daughter?
I think if I told her there was a show,
would she go, oh my God, that's fascinating? Or would she go, Dad, that's on TikTok every day?
No, but it's not. Because, you know, I'll cruise through TikTok every once in a while. And yeah, you'll see, for me, it reminds me more of America's Home Videos.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying just, you know, the funniest home videos, because sometimes there's, you know, devastating stuff, or, you know, there's people who are just griping, or, you know, action or whatever. But it still doesn't feel real. It feels like, you know, it's like, you know what? They couldn't get this in one take, so they did it in about 30 or 40.
Yeah, I got you.
And they finally got it. Real world, it was just, you know, especially that first one. Now, I know, like, as it's progressed, producers have kind of pushed the narrative a little bit, you know, gone to them, say, hey, why don't you go up and say this to them?
Yeah,
because... And do this. You know, but they don't really reshoot. They don't restage things. It's
got it.
The camera for Real World. I mean, right? I mean, you look at the show, and that's what you're watching.
So in you had a season one where like Julie and Kevin are out in the streets arguing about race. She's a white girl from Alabama. He's a black guy from New York City. They're arguing about race. It's unscripted. But if you fast forward seven seasons, if you did the exact same thing, you'd almost be like, that worked in season one.
Yeah.
That was a bit like, if you guys could actually have a race debate on the street, that would be great. Cause like when Julie and Kevin did it, it was television history.
Yeah. I
like,
mean, I think
it's hard. Like when you recreate, it's like, it's not the same feel. It wasn't organic. That actually came from real emotions and real, you know, that came from real conflict.
I think the problem with MTV when they put together the Real World is that they peaked in San Francisco. because they brought such polarizing characters, and I'm going to call them characters. I mean, I know these are real people, and they weren't, you know, maybe Puck was putting on a character, but everyone else wasn't. But they brought in such polarizing characters that it was like, my God, this is, you know, this is a melting pot, really.
That season, I hate to say, that season had two people on that show. There was Judd, who was the cartoonist.
Yep.
And then there was Pam, who was like studying to be a doctor, right?
Yeah.
And they had, Judd liked Pam a lot, like loved her. And then Pam had a boyfriend, and the boyfriend came to visit her on the show, and Judd was this uncomfortable third wheel. Like
he, they showed him
like he's rowing the boat while the two kissing, yeah. Like they, like everywhere they went, Judd was the third wheel dateless guy while Pam and her boyfriend were hugging and kissing and just kind of being close to each other because they missed each other so much. Years later, though, hang in there, big fella.
Yep.
Years later, they're married with kids.
Yeah, nice guys don't always finish last. It just takes them a while to get there.
But when I was talking about Hard Knocks, I think that that reality television has created a phenomenon where people who watch these sports reality shows, especially Hard Knocks, and they kind of get into a player, like they get into the background of a player, and they go, oh, well, he came from this, and his mother worked three jobs, and his uncle was, you know, raised him because father was in jail, or whatever the story is, the hard luck story. They're rootable. But then the business of football sometimes kicks in, and the sort of casual fan doesn't understand, right? Like they go, oh, he's no longer in the league, or he didn't make it. He got cut, or he didn't land on his feet. He didn't make it because the sport is cruel, right? But when you present a character, you sort of go, well, I really liked that guy. I liked his story. I was sort of attracted to him as a character, as a person. And then the business kicks in, and then they're out. That's happening in Formula One right now. Daniel Ricciardo is a driver for McLaren. When Drive to Survive came out, Daniel Ricciardo, who's a race winner, he was a race winner at Red Bull. He's Australian, but he's got a vibrant personality. He's got an attractive personality. He says funny things. He smiles a lot. He's not an introvert. He doesn't mind a camera. He doesn't mind five cameras, right? He's one of those type of personalities. Well, he has struggled over the last couple of years. He's bounced from a couple of teams, and this year he's had a miserable season, a terrible season. And they're letting him go. They're parting ways with him. They're basically paying out his contract so they can put another driver in his seat. And what I saw on social media yesterday was all of these people saying, oh no, what? And it's not because of anything realistic in the sports world. It is because the reality show, for casual fans who just kind of got into the sport and watch it, they were attracted to his personality. They were attracted to who he was as a person. Like the fact that he said crazy things and funny things and made funny videos and, you know, spoke his mind and laughed, and he was warm and engaging, and he wasn't like stoic and pulled back. And I think that's what happens a lot of times in these shows. And I'll be honest with you, this golf thing where they're trying to do kind of the same thing in golf, I think that's another fascinating thing, because a lot of golfers don't have a personality. I'll be honest. They really don't. There's a couple, like some do some fun things, but most of them are just, they're not raised in, like, if you're a professional golfer, you've probably spent more times practicing your putting and chipping when you were younger than you did talking to girls. Like it's just, that's it. Like you have to spend hours and hours and hours and hours practicing the simplest things to be a top level golfer. So they've sort of been in this bubble, in this cocoon. And I'm really fascinated to see how that documentary can make real personalities out of some golfers that don't really have a lot of personality. If there's one group of athletes that I've interviewed where they all feel like the same, it's PGA Tour golfers. Every year that I would go to the International, it felt like every guy that would come to the booth when we would broadcast there was exactly the same. Exactly the same. And football players are all different. Baseball players are all different. But golfers, I just felt like they were all cut the same way. So I think that a show like Hard Knocks, for example, you find the right ones. That's what the camera does, right? It finds the right ones to focus on. Now, look, if Adrian Hutchinson is an introvert, and you can't get two words out of him, well, they're still going to focus on him because he's from Michigan. His dad played football. He's a Lion now. He's a hometown kid. They're still going to focus on him. But the fact that they could bring the cameras to his family and they can all talk and laugh and he's got some personality adds to the attractiveness. I think in 30, 40 years, I wonder if somebody will really look back at all of this from the early 90s on and just talk about sort of the impact it's had on people, their careers. I mean, there's some careers who've been destroyed by reality shows. And there are some careers that are that took off because of reality shows. I saw a girl on she was on Fox News the other day. And I went, wait a minute, hold on. And I had to Google it. It was Rachel from season 3 of Real World.
And I went,
I know that girl. What year did season 3 come out? 94? 93? Something like that? 94, 93. It was around that time.
Oh, maybe 94, 95.
94, 95. Okay.
Yeah, because the first one came out in 92, right?
90, I think 92. All right, so 94, 95.
Yeah.
All right, so what was that, 25 years ago, 27 years ago? I see her on the TV, and I go, wait. Hold on. I see her name, and I'm like, I know it. But I didn't immediately know it. I went, I got this. And I had to Google it, and sure enough, I'm like, bingo. I got it. She was on that show. No idea what happened in 27 years to go from point A to point W, but that's... That was the effect of that show. So we're going to get into the Rams coming up next hour. And the Rams were just on this show not that long ago, Hard Knocks. How much did Sean McVay benefit from that? How much did Sean McVay, a lot of it is obviously he's a brilliant football coach, but he came across great on that show. That was the COVID year where they were filming during the 2020 COVID season. Sean McVay turned out, again, you add a lot of the elements of Sean McVay's life, the fact that he's a brilliant coach, he's now a Super Bowl champion coach, he's got a lot of guys that worked for him that are now off, running other teams. But if you can get cameras to film you and your daily life and you come off well, it benefits you in a tremendous amount of ways. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. The Rams we're going to dive into coming up in the next hour as we continue NFC West Week tomorrow. If we don't have a Rams guest, we'll also break down what we learned from this division, which is a lot. There was a lot of stuff we processed. I had an idea, Ron. I want to throw this at you on the air.
Oh, okay? No.
I'm going to throw it at you. So,
fine, Timmy Trumpets.
You make the final decisions. If we don't get a Rams guest, too bad. But the reason we didn't get a Lions guest made a lot of sense because they were having training camp. You were on vacation.
I was on vacation too, so I wasn't.
The reason
able
we
to...
couldn't do the Lions is because training camp was starting that day, right? Yeah. So they had a big meeting in the morning, and so no one could come. Should we at some point before, when this is over after next week, should we give a bonus Lions interview to make up for Lions interview?
Here's what I think, Tony.
All right.
I think anybody that we missed that following week, because we'll finish right on time, because we still have a week before NFL games actually start.
Right.
We give a shout out to those that we missed.
Okay.
If we don't get a Rams guest today or tomorrow,
we could get him on.
We get him on there in that week, and we'll just make sure that we're able to get that taken care of.
Well, my part of me was like, screw the Rams if they don't want to come on and help us.
Well, I get that.
But the Lions were literally, I am so sorry. I would love to do it, but we got like a wake up call.
It was the first day of camp. It was the first day of meetings. Like the first time we get to talk to the players, hear the coach speak. And I was like, yeah, I know. But, if you want to ignore them just for 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we understood that.
Yeah.
And we don't want to punish Lions fans who didn't get an insider on in this week. So I'm thinking maybe the week after we do the AFC West, we give a Lions shout out.
Yeah.
And then we could probably process their real world, not real world, Hard Knocks experience and what they thought of it all.
Well, no, and that's, and yeah, that should be kind of fun too, because it kind of puts a bow on that. I mean, you know, because that's, you know, for them, I think is it their first time doing it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it was the Lions' first time doing it.
I don't think the Lions, yeah, have ever done it. But, yeah, I mean, definitely this group has never done it before.
Oh, one of the things that was, I'm glad you brought, you kind of reminded me. There was one thing about the Hard Knocks that the Lions, that was so cool. So they had Barry Sanders on. So Barry Sanders was making like a guest appearance, and he was going to be on some TV shows. He was kind of at Lions camp. So they did a thing on Barry Sanders. They showed Lions camp when Barry Sanders was there. And because Sanders was talking about the field, he was like, this is great. Look at this grass. Look at this. Look at this. He goes, man, we had high grass and weeds. And they showed Lions camp. It looked like it was done like in the backyard of somebody's house. Like, it was seriously like thick grass. There was a pond over on the side. It looks like they were like, this looks like a fine place for training camp. Like, just remove some rocks and maybe we'll put some cones to show like out of bounds. We're out. Like, he's walking into this facility that's got like three fields. And it was, he was,
man, we're not talking 1950s.
The contrast. I know. Exact contrast was unbelievable.